First and goal from the three. They're going to float one for the end zone. In the corner, Duke Williams. He's got it for the touchdown. Second and 10 from the 20. Going left to right near hash mark. Nick's going to float it. Coates in the end zone. One-handed grab. He'll come down with it. Touchdown, Sammy Coates. Here's a quick pitch out. This is Corey Grant. He's got a hole. 40, 30, 20. Nobody's going to catch Corey Grant to the end zone. Touchdown, Corey Grant. A 54-yard touchdown run.
We welcome you to Denton Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello, and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, here we are as we record this sort of middle, late May. The first college football magazines are beginning to appear on the shelves. I saw the Lindy's and the Sporting News National Editions at Walmart earlier this evening.
It's like a national holiday for me when they start showing
up. Oh, I know. I mean, I generally disagree with almost everything they say, and I'm very frustrated at the lack of coverage, particularly up here when the cover will have like a player from Missouri or maybe a player from Penn State or something, bizarrely, for the Big Ten crowd. But it's still good just to know that those magazines are coming out, because you know what that means is coming.
College football right around the corner.
Right around the blessed corner. That's right. What's going on, if anything, that you need to tell the folks about as we get started this week?
Well, the first thing is, once again, at the second half of this podcast, we're going to draw a line and then have some World Cup soccer discussion after that. So if you're a soccer fan and you only want to hear soccer discussion, I guess you could fast forward to that point. Or if you're an Auburn football fan, you know, enjoy this first part. And then if you want to listen to the second part, go for it.
Yeah. It won't be as long this time. I mean, we did about 30 minutes on it and then came back and did about 8 or 9 or 10 minutes afterward on football last time. And now people that turned it off at the soccer part last time are going, wait, I missed 8 or 9 minutes of more football. Yeah, you did. But this time we're just going to cover groups E, F, G, and H, including the United States group. And so we're going to just talk a little bit more about kind of how the U.S. should do, who we have to play, you know, what our chances look like, and then kind of our predictions for the end of the tournament. But otherwise, we've got a lot of Auburn stuff to talk about tonight. I wanted to mention that in the last couple of weeks, I had been mentioning on Twitter and Facebook, a couple of the places, that I had brought back a box of Decades of Dominance with me that, you know, I ended up carrying a whole bunch of them down to the bookstore in Montgomery that sold them. But since it was on A-Day, they had a few left over, and I sold a bunch of those the last couple of weeks to people. But I've still got probably 3 or 4 maybe copies left on hand. So if anybody out there wants a paperback copy signed at least by me, and if you want to try to figure some way to get John to sign it too, we'll have to work the roundabout shipping on that. But one way or another, I still have just a handful left. Otherwise, I'm going to bring them with me, and this is to my other announcement. I'll be in Birmingham. We're coming up May 30th through June 2nd is the Alabama Phoenix Festival. It's always one of my favorite shows of the year, getting to come back down to Birmingham, which is practically my hometown almost, being from Sylacauga. And it's always such a great show because they have great people that run it. It's a very well-organized convention. If you do many conventions, you know, sci-fi, comics, Comic-Con, that kind of thing during the year, you know that what really makes a difference is the people that run it. You know, are they organized? Are they professional? Or is it fly by night? And, you know, these guys are really, really good guys from Birmingham that run it. And so this is going to be a really fun time. They always have several good TV, movie-type, you know, guests. They have lots of people in costume. They have a big dealer room with lots of cool items you can't find anywhere else, you know, including
bootleg stuff.
You didn't hear me say that. that you can't find anywhere else. And, you know, it's going to be this year at the Sheraton downtown. It's been in the past at the Cahaba Center, but they're moving it downtown. So I'll be there with a couple of tables of my stuff, and there'll be a bunch of other writers and artists and actors and all kind of neat people. So come check that out starting Friday, May 30th, and I will see you there. And I'll have a few Auburn things, like I said, with me. So any other announcements before we get into our football topics?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, what's first on the agenda tonight?
Well, first is something you brought up a couple times over the last couple of months, and that is something that's kind of gotten under your skin.
Ah.
And that is this topic of, was Auburn lucky in 2013?
Okay.
And it's something that you keep bringing up and other people kept kind of saying, and it bothers you.
Yeah, it's true.
And so I guess I want to take a few minutes to actually talk about it. You know, was Auburn lucky in 2013? If so, does it matter in 2014? And kind of let's talk through the specific things that people would say, you know, were examples of luck or whatever.
Well, you know, when you say that, when you remind me that I'm aggravated about that, and I appreciate you reminding me, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind, let me just say, but I like the way you've structured this, but let me say this before I forget it and before it totally gets out of my mind. I've been rewatching, you know, as I've said last time, the games, you know, not really in any particular order, just whichever one I'm most interested in watching at a given time. And, you know, watching with kind of a critical eye this time, since I don't have a rooting interest this time, so I know what's going to happen. And one thing that's really struck me is, yes, we definitely had some very quote unquote lucky moments that helped us, especially in the big games. But on the other hand, we had a whole lot of very unlucky moments that we had to overcome. So if you eliminate all of our super lucky, you know, miracle and Jordan Hare type plays, but if you also make the times that we're just inexplicably unlucky go away, it really balances out, and we're right where we started at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times in rewatching our big games the last couple of weeks, I have clutched my head in agony at Ricardo Lewis dropping a ball.
This goes back to something I talked about last week where Nick Marshall only needs to improve his completion percentage by 5%.
Yes.
Okay, 5 out of 100. How many passes last year did Ricardo Lewis drop?
Probably 7% of the overall incomplete total. Yeah, if he just can hang on to the dang ball, he's that's Marshall's completion percentage. Yeah, is it 65 or 70? I mean, you know, watching the I mean, we all remember, wasn't it like the first drive of Florida State game?
Mm-hmm.
But the first drive against Alabama.
Yep, and that's right. That was a huge play too.
And I want to say there was one in the second half against Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it was, yeah. You remember how Alabama had taken the lead in the fourth quarter on the 99-yard bomb?
Yep.
So Auburn comes out, and if it's not the very next play, which would be very much like Gus to go, oh, you can do that, we can do that too, right? In the very next series that we have the ball after that 99-yard pass, Marshall chucks it all the way down the field to Ricardo Lewis, and he is open on the right sideline, and he misses it by like an inch. So that was at least three in the Iron Bowl and the Florida State game alone. So my point is, I don't mean to be hammering on poor Ricardo Lewis because he did so many other great things. I mean, you know, we talked about this before. Just running the speed sweep as kind of a power sweep instead of a speed sweep when he does it is a powerful weapon that we have in the arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
But dang, you know, when you talk about us being lucky, you've also got to look at the times that he just missed the ball and we can say we were very unlucky. And there's a lot of other, you know, there's a lot of other moments that I felt like we were just sort of unlucky. So,
how about the, you know, the two guys running into each other in the backfield?
Oh, geez, yeah. Oh, the last 10 minutes against Georgia was just the Keystone Cops in terms of unlucky, stupid things happening that short circuited our offense. Absolutely, that was one of several things that happened like that.
That's right.
And during, you're talking about me still bringing it up or having it brought up. I was listening to last week's Solid Verbal podcast, which I always enjoy. even if sometimes I want to yell at those guys, but they're really cool. And sometimes I do yell on Twitter. and they're very good. They're very kind. But one of their buddies, Celebrity Hot Tub, that I've always followed.
I have to say, my favorite follow on Twitter. He is hilarious.
Yeah, he has. And he's good on their show, too. And he was a guest last week. And he raised an interesting point. He was saying on the show, on their show, that you had to feel like Auburn's luck would, as he put it, kind of even out. And that minus the miracle plays, I mean, he didn't give, I don't think, a specific number, but the inference was without a couple of miracle plays that you cannot rely on, which I understand what he's saying. You can't rely, you know, you can't go into a game saying, all right, we're going to do this, this, and this, and then we're going to have like God reach down and hand the ball, you know, to Ricardo sure. Lewis banking off of two guys' helmets. So, I mean, you know, those things even out. And the impression that I got was that we would lose a couple more games. And I tweeted him back and I said, I understand your point. I think it's valid. But I said, I think that we will improve in other areas, particularly the passing game and maybe defense too, just with some experience sufficient to counteract the lack of the miracle plays. What do you think about that?
I think that's very realistic. The defense was, you know, we talked about it. Statistically, it was terrible last year. It was really good in the red zone. They made on third down, they were good. They made plays when their backs were against the wall. But you can't live like that.
No.
I mean, no matter how good your offense is, you need to the defense needs to be more consistent. You need to tackle better. And I think they will be. I think we have better players. I think we have more experience. I think the defensive line is going to be solid. I think we'll be better at linebacker. You know, I think the secondary would probably be a little bit better in terms of, especially with all the injuries we had at safety down the stretch. So we have a lot of depth there, I think, and a lot of good young athletes. I think we're going to be fine. I think the defense is going to be better. I think it's going to improve. And I think the passing game is going to be better. We've talked about executing, just catching the ball. And then it's not the combination of catching the ball when they hit them and then Marshall just – you know, taking his time and firing a little more accurately more of the time. Sometimes he just fires it over people's heads and stuff.
Yeah.
If he does that better, if he's a little more accurate and they catch the ball a little bit more often, then I think the passing game is going to make a huge leap forward. So, let's talk about a couple of things here. Let's talk about 2013 separate from this coming season, okay?
Okay.
When you talk about luck in terms of football – the plays, like the end of the Alabama game and the Georgia game, you know, you can't quantify that kind of stuff. There is a way to quantify luck in college football. Bill Conley is a guy that writes a blog, statistical blog called College Football Study Hall. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he did last year at the end of the year was look at luck in college football. And the areas where you can really calculate luck are, for example, When a team fumbles the ball, it's basically 50-50 who comes up with it over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a season where you recover, you know, 75% of all the fumbles in your games, yours and the other teams, you are getting lucky. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The ball's bouncing your way.
Right.
And if you recover 10%, you're getting unlucky. Mm-hmm. Well, Auburn was right at like 53% last year. I think they were like 46 fumbles, ours and the other teams in all the games, and we recovered 25. So, I mean, we were like two over what would be exactly the amount of luck we expected. So that is not a big difference. And on the passing side, luck is calculated using basically the amount of defended passes that ended up being intercepted. There's a mathematical formula for that. And Auburn was actually below, you know, the expected amount in that area by a little bit. So it kind of overall it evened out, and Auburn was not one of the top, you know, 25 teams of the country in luck last year. When you use those pieces of luck that you can statistically quantify, they weren't. And so to me, that's the kind of thing I would tell people, look, you know, here's who really benefited from luck last year. Those plays were kind of one of a kind, crazy kind of plays. But in the bigger picture, that's not luck. That's a team that's talented, making plays in a situation. And as I think, as we've talked about in the Georgia game in particular, we should have beat them by 30 points. It shouldn't have been in that situation where we had to throw a stupid play. And I think the defense, two things about, you know, bringing this forward to talk about 2014, like you were doing, the defense is going to be better. And I think when we get ahead of teams, it'll be harder for them to come back on us. And I think, as we've talked about many times already, the rest of the offenses of the SEC are going to be worse. Right. You know, when Auburn's offense starts scoring, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the other team's offense to make plays. So the other team is going to have to execute an offense and roll up and down the field and score points. The difference is this coming season, you know, there's not Aaron Murray and Mettenberger and McCarron and all these other guys out there, Connor Shaw, all these other guys out in the SEC, Johnny Manziel, that can lead their team up and down the field without making mistakes and score a bunch of points. And also, we're talking about the wide receivers and guys that were on their teams that made a big difference. They're gone. And so I think when Auburn starts scoring a lot of points on other teams this year, Auburn's defense is going to be better to begin with, and the other team's offenses are going to be worse. And therefore, Auburn is going to have an easier time stopping them, you know, getting a sack, forcing a turnover, that kind of thing. Our offense is going to put pressure on them. The other team is going to have to take chances. Other teams aren't going to be able to play conservative and run the ball and play, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust against Auburn, because I'm going to be honest, our offense is going to score 35 points a game on people. So it's going to put pressure on their teams to take chances, and that's going to allow Auburn to take advantage of what the other teams are doing. And I think that's going to be a big difference this fall.
No, absolutely. You know, one of the things that was enjoyable to me about last season, especially toward the end when we really got our offense rolling like a machine, is that we were able to actually get some decent leads on teams. Now, in some cases, that didn't hold up, obviously, against Georgia and Missouri, for example. You know, even when we pulled out, they'd catch back up. And, of course, Texas A&M, obviously. But part of that is because as good as our defense was able to play at times, like you were just saying, it never, you know, yes, we were rolling up and down the field scoring points, but often so was the other team. Mm-hmm. And if we can put the other team in a position where they have to do that and we can actually prevent them from doing that, now we're a much tougher team to beat. Because, you know, again, if we're scoring tons of points and letting them score tons of points, then it just comes down to who has the ball last, basically. But if we're scoring tons of points and then putting the, you know, now it's your serve and we're holding them to three and out, that's a whole different ball game.
That's right. Well, and again, I don't think all these SEC teams other than Auburn, maybe Ole Miss, are going to be in the top 20 nationally in offense next year.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas A&M, Missouri, Georgia, Ole Miss, Auburn, we're all in the top 20 in offense next year. And the other teams, you know, Alabama and LSU and South Carolina weren't far behind. So I think all those teams are going to drop back. I think Auburn and Ole Miss will be in the top 20 in offense, and everybody else is going to drop down a good bit in terms of yards and points. And that's exactly what you're talking about, is they're not going to be as effective. They're not going to move the ball as well or score as many points.
You know, I've said this before about the SEC West, and looking at some of the numbers today made me think it again. You know, Ole Miss was not a bad football team last year.
No.
They had
a tough schedule.
And they ended up sixth in the West. I'm just, dang, you know, that's tough. We touched on a little bit on improvement across the different positions. We keep saying at some point we're going to talk about position by position. You want to just look at, maybe break it up and maybe just look at two or three positions right quick, or you want to, or do we want to?
No, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
We'll do it more systematic.
We'll have a show.
Yeah, we got plenty of other stuff to get to tonight.
And we got plenty of other weeks ahead that we need to, you know, material.
That's right.
So every week, my wife is like, what are you going to talk about tonight? And I'm like, oh, we got plenty.
Well, the big news this week was they released the future SEC college schedule for, you know, until 2025.
Yeah, what we already knew in theory became put down on black and white and just makes you just roll your eyes and shake your head.
And so Here it is. So just so I'll read it out. So and then we can talk about it.
Yeah, that's great.
2014, we played South Carolina in Auburn.
Hey.
2015 at Kentucky.
That's cool. I get to go to that. Good trip to Lexington.
2016 versus Vanderbilt at home. Mm-hmm. 2017 at Missouri.
Woo! Finally. Before I'm 100 years old, get to go to Columbia.
2018 against Tennessee at home.
Dang it. See, now that needs to be in Knoxville because I want to go to Knoxville. All right. Keep going.
2019 at Florida.
Yeah, we owe them a trip down there. So.
Mm-hmm. 2020, Kentucky at home. Yeah. 2021 at South Carolina. Yeah. 2022, Missouri at home. 2023 at Vandy.
I know what I'm doing in 2023. They roll my wheelchair into that little stadium.
2024, Florida
in
Auburn.
Don't get me started. No, I'm going to in just a minute. Go ahead. One more.
All right, 2025 at Tennessee.
So I know what I'm doing in November of 2025. Great. Great. Let me so that's 11 years from now. So that means that I will go by whatever college she's at and pick up my kindergartner from college to go to the Tennessee game, John.
There you go.
Golly. All right. I've got to say the thing about Florida. Okay. I was saying this on Twitter a while ago. I don't know if you've seen it. But I was doing a little math. All right. I'm not precise here, but I'm within a year or two, okay? I just listed on Twitter, go check it out if you haven't seen it. I just listed like six or seven non-SEC teams from 1981 to 2012 or whatever, right? Like seven different non-SEC teams off the top of my head that we played more often during those years than we will play Florida between 2012 and 2040.
Wow.
Clemson, Syracuse, Southern Cal,
Southern Miss was on
Southern Mississippi, Texas. I mean, these are teams that we've played at least three times in the last couple of decades. Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Florida, who we've played every year for decades, we will not have played them as often between last 2 years ago and 2040.
I mean, I haven't gone back to look at the numbers recently, but I know it is one of the top SEC rivalries in terms of number of games played.
Not anymore.
Well, it won't be.
It won't be. I mean, that is insane. 2040. 2040.
Mm.
Oh my gosh. I was not happy about 8-game SEC schedule before, but let me just say this to the SEC. All right. I'm going to summarize it very succinctly. So you get out a little pad and pen and take notes, SEC, because I'm going to summarize this for you nice and clear. 8 games. If you want to play an 8-game conference schedule, keep the conference at 12 teams or less. If you are determined to play a 14-team league or have a 16-team league, you cannot do 8 games. You can't have your cake and not play it too, okay? If you're going to play 8 games, you can't have 14 teams. Pick one or pick the other. It just ticks me off.
I agree. I'm fine with a 9-game schedule and 2 rotating opponents.
Well, I mean, I understand that they don't want to do a 9-game schedule, but if you're that determined not to do a 9-game schedule, don't have a 14-team league. If you're going to keep an 8-team schedule, pretty soon we're going to have 4 divisions and be like the NFC East and the NFC West.
Well, I think it was Barrett Salee that made the point today when we were talking about this. I thought it was a really good point where he basically said, it's turned into like 2 conferences.
Yes.
We're basically the SEC East and SEC West are basically 2 conferences, and we have these interconference games like the SEC, like we play, you know.
It's turned into Major League Baseball.
It's turned into Major League Baseball, and this is interleague play.
Yeah, and then you play the World Series at the end against the American League team or whatever.
That's right. It's not a regular, we're in the same conference, we play them all. It's interleague play.
So right now, we're playing 7 other teams in our division and then 1 other team. No. Six other, but if we went to 16, but yeah, but right now you're playing six others, and six teams in your division and two others,
and you're permanent, and then the one rotates.
Right, exactly, and you might as well just have a 16 conference league and play six non-conference, and then have a World Series with the other division. I mean, with the other division, if you're going to do that, why not? Why play South Carolina? Why play Kentucky? Why play Vanderbilt? Let's just play the other six in our division, and then have a World Series in Atlanta. I don't know.
Tell me how you really feel.
This makes for good radio. So get people fired up. Tell us what you think. Tweet us and send us your comments. What you think about this? But again, I just feel like that just sums it up to me. Is if you cannot say I want to have a small list of teams to play, you know, an 8-team schedule. And keep adding teams. If you add teams, you've got to add conference games. You can't do one without the other, to me. I think a 12-year wait is ridiculous. Ridiculous. So.
I'd agree with that.
All right.
All right. Moving on from that.
Yes.
One of the things we talked about last year was Gus has this thing where after the first touchdown of the game, he would often go for 2 points.
This would be the fire the guns up in the air signal.
Yes. The
bang, 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 bang.
So what do you think now that, you know, that was kind of a cool thing to do back when, you know, when nobody expected us to win the SEC or anything.
Right. When we were desperate for points and playing Washington State and Arkansas State. Right.
But now it's a different situation. Do you think they will continue to do that? Do you like it? Will it be effective?
What was the game? You remember we talked about this early on. We did it against Washington State and we scored. We did it against Arkansas State, I believe, and we scored. And we were just like, oh, this is awesome. But I said, what happens when we do it on the first touchdown and we don't make it and we lose the game by 1 point? And I'm trying to think which game it was that we did it. It may have been either Ole Miss or Arkansas. Was it Ole Miss?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
That we did, yeah. I think it was Ole Miss that we did it, and we didn't make it. We threw a pass. It was, you know, it's like it was our like number 19 that's the holder.
Yep.
And he threw the pass, and I'm sitting here thinking, when you're going for two, you need to put the ball in the hands of the most reliable scorer. You don't give it to your kick holder and let him throw a slant route into the end zone. You know, that seems like a very low percentage way to try to.
That's right. Unless the guy is uncovered, don't bother.
Yeah, yeah. And so it for a while there in that game, because I think Ole Miss kicked a couple of field goals. It was 6-6.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt like it was neat for a while because it was like we were doing another thing that Oregon did, right? We had the play cards like Oregon, and we were running a cool thing to get people excited. But, yeah. If you're Auburn in September, it's one thing. But Auburn trying to get to Atlanta and maybe to the Rose Bowl, maybe you don't need to do that. So do you want them to do it this season at all?
I think the way that Auburn did it was very smart. They came out lined up in a certain formation. Mm-hmm. And waited to see if the other team lined up properly. If they didn't, then you took advantage of it and scored 2 points. If they did, then you called the kicker over, kicked the extra point. And to me, that just makes sense. Like, if they're going to be stupid about it, you take it. You take the 2 points. If they're going to play it smart and they got the right guys in the right positions, they kick the extra point. But if it's something else you're making the other team practice for.
That's true.
And it's also kind of plays into this Gus, you know, high school coach philosophy. You're getting more guys in the game playing, more guys involved.
Oh, that's true. And I do like that Gus tries to keep everybody involved. Honestly, though, if I wanted to go for two last year, I'd have just lined up in as much of a power formation as I could and give the ball to Trey.
I hear you.
Because, I mean, if you got to get 2 or 3 yards, isn't that the most reliable way to do it, pretty much?
As the season wore along, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or certainly, you know, Nick doing the read option with Trey, and if everybody goes to the inside, Nick just keeps it and runs for the corner. So
yeah.
All right. Next up, since the last time we spoke, the NFL draft actually happened.
It seems like that was like 2 months ago. I can't believe
it. It seems like forever. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. With the second pick in the 2014 NFL draft, the St. Louis Rams select Greg Robinson, tackle, Auburn.
Turn up.
5'5", 332 pounds. With the 75th pick in the 2014 NFL draft, the St. Louis Rams select Trey Mason, running back, Auburn.
Yeah, I've been waiting for him to come off the board. I want to show you his XO. And you can see how quick-footed he is. He gets north, he gets south. Of course, the fact that they played the national championship game and he played so well caught people's eyes. Now,
but we just wanted to touch on a couple things that happened. Greg Robinson and Trey Mason are both St. Louis Rams near you.
I'm very excited that my hometown team is now a big Auburn destination. I mean, all the other Auburn folks are going to be cheering for the team that I kind of default, you know, pay attention to up here. So that's cool.
You know what the problem is for you?
No.
If they don't sell out, they black out the games.
Yeah, well. I don't know if they're going to sell out. They may sell out of town and move and be the something else Rams.
D Ford went to the Chiefs. Cool. Jay Prosh went to Houston. Mm-hmm. I was happy about that. A lot of the other guys signed free agent contracts. Chris Davis on San Diego. But no, I'm excited to see. I mean, I think Robinson obviously is going to start right away. Yeah. I think Mason could play there. They got that guy who was at Vanderbilt a couple years ago as a starting running back, and I think Mason's just better than him.
Yeah. So yeah, I think so. Yeah, you know, the Rams had a very interesting draft. They got that good lineman from Pitt.
No, Aaron Donald. That was a great pick.
Yeah,
that guy's a stud.
And they got the lineman from Missouri. So.
Sam.
So they got the Florida State DB. So mm-hmm. Think about this. They rolled out their new draftees and they had two Auburn guys, a Missouri guy and a Florida State guy. I'm like, this looks familiar.
Mm-hmm.
All they needed was like one of the linemen on the kick six from the Bama to be out there to make it perfect. But and maybe the safety that the ball bounced off his helmet against when Ricardo Lewitt for Georgia. I just have all out there. But, yeah, I like that. Did you see what Conan O'Brien said about the Rams draft?
No.
He said something like, there was a lot of controversy and excitement and intrigue focused on the Rams drafting Michael Sam and so forth this year. And said that was very unusual because it's the first time anybody's been excited about the Rams draft. Yeah.
All right. It was interesting to see where, Manziel went. He went to Cleveland and then the other guys, where they ended up. So
I've got some buddies from years and years back that are big Texas A&M fans. And it's interesting to see their back and forth with the Texas fans and all. It's a very different, mm-hmm. It's a different relationship than what we have with Alabama fans, which is that I just block them on Twitter. They have an interesting relationship, but it was funny because just the A&M people are kind of like the ones that are the least bit aggravated at Manziel kind of feel like he got his just desserts by going to Cleveland. And it's just going to be interesting to see how well he does there because, did he make the right decision? Should he have tried to figure out some way to not go to Cleveland? Kind of like,
He didn't.
There have been players that have found ways to not go to cities they didn't want to go to. So
yeah, but that's if you're the first pick overall, you have a little bit of leverage. He didn't have any leverage. He was happy to get picked when he did. And, the other part is that he got drafted and the same day they announced their great number one wide receiver may have a drug suspension all year for failing a drug test. So that's not good. Josh Gordon.
He can just flap around some more and run for a touchdown. That's fine.
And maybe that. All right. There's also been moving on from the draft. There's been a lot of recruiting stuff going on with Auburn.
Yeah, man. Holy cow.
Recruiting continues to just be gangbusters, players rolling in. Not just recruiting, but we also had this player transfer from Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Golson transferred from Ole Miss. He was a starter basically in the offensive line. Transferred, and he's going to have to sit out a year.
But it works out kind of good because we've got a good gelled offensive line right now. If we lose a couple of them going into the next year, and you just plug him in and you just keep rolling. So
that's right. Another 4-star guy that's going to be eligible next year, and he does because he's a transfer, he doesn't count against the 25-man recruiting limit during the year. He still counts against the 85-man roster. But it's a big pickup. I mean, he's a good player. And it's a kind of thing where it helps us and it hurts Ole Miss, a team in our division. So it's kind of a double win there. So
yeah, and also we got a very good running back to go back there behind him,
Javon Robinson.
Yeah,
who at one point signed with Auburn and went through fall practice for a week.
Yeah,
and we thought was gonna be on the team a couple years ago, and then had this whole transcript thing spring up and ended up having to go to junior college. And then while I was at junior college, everybody thought it was a done deal. He was going to go to Alabama or somewhere else. And then he ended up coming back and he was committed to Auburn.
Yeah. The only thing better than getting a running back of his caliber is getting him when everybody thinks he's going to go to Alabama.
Or getting him twice when people think he's going to go to Alabama.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet.
But he's the number one JUCO running back in the country, and you can add him to the class next year. 2015 will have lost Cameron Payne and Grant.
Yeah.
And you have a situation where he comes in and you got so you have him, Javon Robinson, you have Peyton Barber back.
Rock.
You have Rock, and you have Kerryon Johnson, the other guy we recruited, who's an excellent running back. So I mean those guys will all be competing for time, and we're gonna be very, very strong at running back for years to come.
I'll go ahead and coin it. If we can start calling Javon Robinson roll, we'll have the rock and roll backfield. There you go.
You heard it here first.
You just wish you thought of that before I did. That's all it is right there. All right. I mean, just think about that, though. We will have gone from Trey Mason, Corey Grant, and Cameron Artis Payne, just rolling right on with no pause.
Well, and Ben Tate before that.
And then Dyer. And now, and then we'll just roll right on into Rock Thomas, Peyton Barber, Javon Robinson. There's one other I'm forgetting. Kerryon Johnson. Yep. And then I guess we know that Jonathan Ford isn't going to be back playing offense anymore with all this going on.
Yeah, it looks like he's still playing defensive back for now.
So, man.
It is an impressive group.
And then you're handing the ball to Ricardo Lewis on the sweep some, too. So,
that's right.
Man, lots of talented players looking to carry the ball there.
Well, and I think some of it is what we talked about earlier. The momentum from the big season last year is just going to be huge in recruiting this year.
Yeah.
And then also, I think there are certain positions where players want to play for Gus Malzahn. And running back is it. If you play running back in his office, you're going to be a big star.
Well, yeah. I mean, when Auburn under Gus has it rolling, then your option, before your option was go to Alabama and get in the NFL, even though it's a boring system and Saban's the devil and a dictator, or go to Auburn, but you might go 3-9. Now it's go to Alabama with crappy Saban and boring offense and defense, or go to Auburn, which also plays for national championships, beats Alabama in big, huge games, and is a lot more fun, and the coach is cool. It's a lot harder decision to make to turn your back on Auburn and go to Alabama now than it was, 15 months ago.
That's right.
You got to think so.
The other part is they have a lot of depth at running back right now with Henry and the other guys they've recruited. And I think that's going to come back, and Auburn's getting to the point where we have a lot of running back depth and a lot of running back depth committed. And, a year from now, we may not be having any running backs commit because they're looking at that going, I got to go somewhere else. I'm not going to play there.
Sure, but that's fine because we'll be stocked up, man.
We'll
be good to go.
All right, you ready for a couple of listener questions?
Yeah, that's what they came up with this week.
All right. First question comes from Boozer.
Yay.
Boozer 1987, who says, who on Auburn's team do you think – this is an NFL draft-related question since we just talked about that – who do you think might be potential first-round picks on our current roster for next year's draft?
Boozer 87. I got to think that was after the Syracuse game.
And so he suggests a couple of people
became. I'm sorry, I just was sitting there waiting to pop that because I just thought, okay, what made you drink in 87?
You had it in the can there.
I did. Who's the draft pick waiting to happen right now?
Well, first round
pick.
Oh,
jeez.
Okay, here's a couple of candidates he puts out there.
Mm-hmm.
Duke.
Yeah, well, he thinks so. Did you see his tweet?
I didn't.
He said something like, Lord willing, this time next year, that'll be me. He tweeted that.
Nick Marshall.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, we'll see. Rhystus Mukes.
Yeah, I could see that.
One of the best centers in the college football this year.
Sure.
Corey Grant.
No.
Gabe Wright.
Maybe. If Gabe has a big, you know, D4 type year, I could see him going.
But he could have he could have a
Nick Fairley year.
Yeah, I mean, and also not even, he'd have to be as many sacks as Nick Fairley. If he's just a big run stuffer and makes some plays behind the line, I think he could have a big season and move up definitely to be an NFL. He has the kind of ability, he could be an NFL player.
What has happened, and I have theories about this, but I don't pay as much attention to the NFL probably as you do, or people in Guam do. What has happened that has made running backs drop to like the third round now?
It's a couple of things. One is, for a while it had to do with the salary scale, but it also has to do with running backs are kind of seen as consumable commodities. Mm-hmm. We've talked about how running backs only have so many carries in their body. Mm-hmm. And also the other thing is running backs were much more hit or miss than other positions in the draft, where you think they're good and then you draft them and there you could, you know, some of them can play and some of them can't. And so the picking one really high, the washout rate was greater at running back than it is, for example, at offensive line or defensive line. So it's teams passing the ball more. So those positions that evolved in passing are more important. And then also running backs were seen as, you know, kind of reusable commodities. And a lot of teams were coming up with really good running backs, you know, in the sixth or seventh round. There are a lot of productive running backs in the NFL who are not high draft picks. I mean, Adrian Peterson is kind of the exception. He was a, you know, stud, top of the, you know, draft kind of guy. But a lot of the other running backs, I mean, Arian Foster was one of the best running backs in the league, and he was undrafted. A lot of the other running backs were kind of late round guys. And a lot of the teams are now looking at a situation where they, you know, they'll pick guys in the middle of the draft, they just plug him in and play him, and then they don't have to have a top of the draft guy. The guy for the Redskins a couple years ago that had a huge season was undrafted. So that, well, I think that's the philosophy. And the other part is, you know, running backs take such a pounding in the NFL that their lifespan is very short. So you're basically picking a high draft pick at a position where it's risky whether you think they can really play or not. And you know, you may spend a bunch of money on them and then they get crushed in week three or whatever. So,
well, I think that's all very good. But here is sort of my theory, and you tell me if there's any validity in it too. This is from what I've observed, is it seems like in like the 80s, maybe into the 90s even, college offenses largely often were built around a big feature running back. And so they had more opportunity to showcase and separate themselves so that when the NFL team came to draft them, they knew that there were a handful of running backs that were just franchise, score all the time, power, you know, big time running backs that would get drafted in the first round. Whereas now the offenses seem to be more running back by committee. You know, even when we had Trey Mason doing everything he did last year, look how many carries, you know, Cameron Artis Payne and Corey Grant and even Ricardo Lewis and everybody got. So, and everybody except the fullback, Prosh. And so it just seems to me that offenses in college have gotten away from the Bo Jackson, Herschel Walker, Stephen Davis, Emmitt Smith feature back monster. And so the NFL has kind of followed suit and doesn't draft them in that same way.
I think that's some of it. That's true. Some of that has to do with the percentage of plays that are running plays versus passing plays in both college and the NFL. And in both places, the number of passing plays is going up. Yeah. And the other part of that is I think the NFL has copied the running back by committee thing, where a lot of teams have two or three running backs they kind of rotate in or use them in different situational things. The 49ers have, you know, basically a college football all-star team in their backfield now.
Yeah.
With the guys they've drafted. So I think that's kind of where teams are going with it.
Okay, what other questions we got?
All right. I was so busy talking about that question, I stopped looking at the question.
That was a good question.
All right. The next question comes from Aeutitude, who says, do Dodge Chargers and Challengers grow on trees in Tuscaloosa?
Yes, they do. They do. And all you have to do is be very good at football and ask Coach Saban for one. You know,
we're gonna. There was a picture of another Alabama recruit with his car. So.
Well, Pat White, the West Virginia quarterback, yes. Somebody pointed out that clearly his recruitment had happened before Tuscaloosa switched over to Dodge as their bribe, a vehicle of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had been offered like a cat. What was it? Something else. It was not.
I thought it was offered a Corvette.
Yeah, he was offered a Corvette. Right. So they've switched their brand of payoff from Chevy to Dodge. So there we go. We know that much anyway. Okay.
All right. Next question comes from Emily Rios.
Yay.
Who asked there seems to be a lot of excitement around the defensive line for the first time in a while. Based on expectations, can you compare it to defensive line in the past?
Yeah, well, it does remind me of how Pat Dye used to build up those huge defensive lines and just rotate them. That ran through my mind all year when they kept talking about how we would rotate all those great defensive linemen. Didn't it harken back to you to the good old days of the 80s?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we've gone through a period where we didn't have as much depth and talent at that position, or the guys we recruited there weren't as good. And I think now we really have, you know, three deep in a lot of those positions with talented players. Okay. I mean, losing D Ford is gonna hurt. He was an excellent player, made a lot of plays last year. But I mean, just the three freshmen last year, Carl Lawson, and Elijah Daniel, and Montrevious Adams, are all gonna get better.
Yes, amazing.
I mean, they're all, you know, we're playing straight out of high school last year. They've been in the weight room for a year. They've been in the scheme for a year. They're all going to be better. They're all good players last year.
Yeah.
And I think everybody expects Lawson to be the man, but the other two made a lot of plays too. So, I mean, Gabe Wright's going to be a good player. We got some defensive ends on the other side who are good players. We got some other defensive tackles who, you know, Ben Bradley made a lot of plays down the stretch last year. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a lot of talent. I think the defensive line is going to be a strength of the team. I think I love this thing they did in the spring where they took the defensive, you know, took the big tackles and rotated them out on the outside and basically played four 300-pound guys in the defensive line. And, you know, we put like Gabe Wright or Adams on the end at defensive end. And it's kind of like, you know, some of those LSU teams from 4 or 5 years ago that had a 290-pound guy playing defensive end.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're trying to run against him, that was really hard. And I think, you know, when Auburn plays against those kind of teams, against LSU or Alabama, those kind of teams that want to just line up and hammer us, we may break out that kind of defense and say, okay, you know, do what you, you know, take your shot here.
The year that always occurs to me, since what she's asked about, I guess the 87-88 defensive line was the best Auburn's probably ever had, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Tracy Rocker, all the guys that was the best defensive line.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who. Well, I mean, Benji Rowland was the nose guard. Tracy Rocker and Stallworth.
Stallworth was the other.
Oh man,
he was the other end.
And then you had those great linebackers behind him. So yeah, what a great defensive line. The front seven was huge.
I mean, that was the year I give the exact number, but Auburn allowed about 7 points a game. So.
Oh yeah, exactly, and shut out three or four teams in a row during that season too.
Our next question comes from another question from Aeutitude, who asks, how worried should I be about Hogzilla? I mean, and he says, other than finding a big ass grill to cook it on.
What is Hogzilla?
You didn't see the picture? Oh, you need to Google that. There's a new picture of that Brett Bielema, your favorite SEC coach, released. Like with a picture of their stadium and a giant hog, and it says Hogzilla.
All right. Google is showing me. I see a lot of different things. One of them's on a bun. So I don't know. I don't know what's I, okay. Well, that's fine. That's fine. We'll see old Hogzilla coming in on the first week of the season this year. Arkansas gets to be the game I missed because of Dragon Con again. So that's getting tiresome, but I'll have the DVR rolling. Now, you know, last year I was able to sneak over to the steakhouse across the street from the Hyatt and watch most of the Washington State game. So I'll try to do that type of thing again if I can get out of the – if I can fit my panels around it that way. There's a bunch of good games the opening weekend. Have you seen the schedule, the TV schedule?
I haven't really looked at it yet in detail.
But. All right. Well, there's a website that I always go to. And
The LSU.
Yeah, there's an LSU website. It's the one thing I'll give LSU great credit for, or whoever these people are.
It's a fan website.
Oh, but it's so good. It's so good. They list every game that's on TV, every channel, even on the computer. And they have them up. They have the first week up now. And, I mean, you know, those sort of like kickoff type games, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's some good ones Friday, Saturday. Man, some good ones.
It's going to be – we'll go over the schedule soon.
Yeah.
We'll do that as part of the discussion.
Absolutely.
All right. Our last question comes from Earl at Prowler01. He says, Does it seem like the new SEC schedule rotation – could make the championship game rematches more or less likely, he says. He says that could be the only positive.
Well, you've got to think less likely just because we're only playing two, right? Aren't we just playing?
Right, two teams from the other division.
Yeah, two teams from the division. I mean, this gives me a headache because remember my other theory was that if you play a team – in the other division, it makes it less likely for both of them to get to Atlanta. That's why Auburn's never played Georgia. Alabama's never played Tennessee. And Florida's never played LSU in the SEC championship game. When they play each other, it makes it less likely to have a rematch. The only rematches that Auburn has had have been Florida and Tennessee. And those were not regular every year. I don't believe when they happened. No, when they happened, they were not our every year rivals, you know, matchups. It was Georgia. So, Florida might have been, but it was the very end of that. So I just think it makes it less likely that the same two teams will play each other if they've already played once. It's much more unlikely. So I don't know. Do with that what you will.
I think you're right. I just think, I mean, from a simple math perspective, there's seven teams in the other division, you're only playing two of them, so it's less likely.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you're not knocking each other out and that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
But I mean, I'm not sure that's an advantage or a disadvantage. I just think.
I think if you studied it over a long period of time, you'd find some sort of statistical relevance. But in the mm-hmm. short term, it's just that stuff happens, you know?
That's right.
So,
All right.
Well, we're in our final segment now.
Yes. We'll put the warning out now. From this point forward, there be soccer.
All right. The clock is ticking down. We're in our last of the show. We've had a pretty good bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. But now I guess we roll into part two of two of our big World Cup preview. It's not – let's see. What day does the World Cup actually start? It's not that far from now, is it? Let me see.
I said it last time.
Yeah, it's – it starts Thursday, June 12th. So,
not far away.
11 plus 12 is 23 days. So, it's over 3 weeks. Okay, well, we're going to do two things tonight. We're going to, I'm assuming that at some point I've gone and edited in some sort of music and or screaming person in some foreign language there. So, and if not, here you go.
A country connected by a game. Simple enough for the sand, grand enough for the stars, enjoyed by billions, mastered by few. An event will rule here, international in scope, built on national pride. A celebration of heritage, heroes, and the unifying power of peaceful competition.
Oh, that was awesome. Okay. And I'll forget and do it the other part. So tonight we need to do groups E, F, G, and H, the back four. and then we'll kind of look at what, you know, we think is going to happen overall. So, because we covered A, B, C, and D last time. So, Group E, we have Ecuador, France, Honduras, and Switzerland. Now, let me flip here to my schedule so I can... See, Ecuador is not what you'd call a power World Cup international team. But the South American teams do always seem to have the potential to sort of come out of nowhere and have really good runs. Ecuador had a really good player that just passed away. He died some kind of stomach illness or something, and then he had a heart attack or something. So, you know, it's one of these things where a team, you know, when basically it's like this, when you have a tournament that takes 2 or 3 years just to get the teams qualified into it, weird things can happen over that time. You know, it's kind of like if, you know, it's kind of like if Auburn got qualified for the SEC championship game because of 2010 and actually played it in 2012. You know what I mean? It would a different outcome than what you would have thought in 2010. So,
sure.
So same sort of thing can happen, and that's what happened to Ecuador. So that really means Ecuador is probably going to make a quick exit, and that leaves France, Honduras, and Switzerland. Now, I say France is sort of Jekyll and Hyde in the World Cup because France 1 year will be awesome. 1998, playing at home, they were unstoppable. They even beat Brazil in the final. But the 4 years before that, they didn't even qualify when it was in the U.S. In 2002, France is the world champions and the European champions. They roll into Japan, Korea, and lose all three games and go home. And then in 2006, when everybody wrote them off because they had been so bad 4 years earlier, they went all the way to the final and barely lost to Italy in the final game. So, you know, they go from winning the World Cup, they go from not qualifying to winning the World Cup to getting run out in three games to going to the final minute of the final game. So you just never know which French team is going to show up. And so, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with Ecuador. You don't know what's going to happen with France. Honduras is one of those CONCACAF Central American teams that on a given day can play well or can be terrible. And Switzerland is so weird. If I remember correctly, Switzerland is the only team that's ever done this. In 2006, Switzerland had this great defense and no offense at all. And they tied all three group games 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, which gave them
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, nobody could...
That sounds like... I'm sorry. That has no appeal to me at all.
Well, but this is the funny thing about it. They didn't score a point, but they didn't let anybody score against them, and so they ended up getting 3 points for three ties. But because they gave everybody else a point, each of the other three teams, or at least two of them, won a game, right, over the fourth team and got 4 points. So you had a four, Switzerland with three, and a team with zero, and so the fours went through, and Switzerland never lost a game and didn't get to the second round. I mean, that's the thing that's so funny is Switzerland's like the only team in the history of the World Cup that did not lose a game in the first round and didn't get to the second round.
Didn't give up a goal.
Didn't give up a goal, didn't lose a game, and didn't get to the second round. That's hard to do. That's hard to do. So anyway, what that really means is that Group E is just a weird, weird group. And I'm just going to say that France does well enough to get through, and I'll say Switzerland just kind of backs their way in because I can't pick Honduras to get the second round. I don't see that. So I'll run through the other three groups, and then we can kind of look at what we've got left and kind of you and me both can give our predictions, all right? Group F, Argentina wins the group. They're always one of the best teams in the first round. And they've got one of the best players in the world in Lionel Messi. Then you've got three kind of B-list teams competing for the second spot. Bosnia-Herzegovina is in it for the first time ever. Iran, which is always fun to see. And Nigeria, who's one of the better African teams. The knock on the African teams is they're always very athletic and very fast. But, you know, Pele has even mentioned this, that they don't play – terribly organized a lot of the time. It's the coaching. And that really just goes back to these countries that have a lot of poverty. The young players don't get a lot of good technical coaching when they're young. And so, you know, as Nigeria, as some of these other countries have more money kind of flowing in through their big pro players that are in the big leagues, I think that'll improve. And I think that you'll see African teams doing very well in the years to come, but they're still kind of disorganized. So you got to feel like Argentina wins Group F, and then, you know, you really just roll the dice. I'm going to say, I'll say Bosnia. Why not? When in doubt.
There was an interesting Sports Illustrated article about in the past month or so about the Bosnia team. And, you know, the kids who are the young men who are on that team now were kids playing soccer in the ruins during the war.
Yeah.
There. And that was, that's interesting. So.
Yeah. And I just always say, when in doubt, go with the European team because they've played each other a lot. You know, they haven't been playing Costa Rica and Belize and stuff. So, Group G, Germany, got to think wins that group because this is the United States group. Germany's going to cruise through that group. They really are one of the three or four best teams. And then it just comes down to Ghana, Portugal, and the United States. And, you know, I want to say the United States can get the second spot in that group, but we've got to exercise the ghosts of that Ghana, you know, had the hex Ghana has over us. Cause Ghana's like our Arkansas Auburn over the years. And then Portugal, you know, they're a one man team. If we can shut down Cristiano Ronaldo, we got a shot. And if we can't, he's going to kill us. So, you know, I'll say we get through, but I just can't think of, you know, there are not many other teams that could have been drawn second or third in that group that we'd have more problems with, you know, so just a bad draw for us. And, finally, Group H, Algeria somehow got in that group, Belgium, who's the power there, South Korea and Russia. Now, this is a very, very interesting group. I'm going to enjoy watching this group play. Algeria is a good African team. You know, they have it. They may have a run in them, but I sort of doubt it. Belgium is a great team. Belgium's been always kind of a consistent sort of a, if I were to compare, you know, international soccer to college football, Belgium has always been kind of a, kind of a Wisconsin or something, you know, kind of an Ole Miss somewhere in there. But this year they've got, you know, they've got, if they're Ole Miss this year, they've got a Manning running.
Okay.
Because they've got a Arsenal player. I believe it's I believe that's where Van Persie plays. I'm not sure. But anyway, South Korea is always so scrappy. You can't ever count South Korea out. And Russia has a knack for pulling upsets in big tournaments. So this is going to be a very interesting group. I'm going to say Belgium and South Korea, but Russia has a chance. So let us now kind of do you have any thoughts on groups E, F, G, and H, or you want to go ahead and look at kind of who we think is going to win?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I mean, I could say something about him, but I really don't know.
All right. So I'm going to throw out what I think will be like the final eight.
Okay.
And let's see what you think is going to happen. I'm going to say the final eight – After the second round is over, the Sweet 16 goes down to the Elite Eight. I think you'll have Brazil, Spain. Japan. That Group C is terrible. Italy. Got to go with Italy. France, Argentina, Germany, and Belgium. That's a lot of European teams to be doing well in South America.
It is.
I'm sort of European biased just because they always seem to have the biggest, the most powerful teams, except for Brazil and Argentina. So now let me caution you with this. Argentina always has an exciting, athletic, well-coached team, and they always like flame out in the third round. So you have to be very.
It's never been it. It hasn't been in their home continent in a while.
That's true. That could overcome their weird little jinx. So, all right. So, who do you like of the final four? I mean, I know they're going to be matched up in certain pairs, but let's just say overall. Let's just say if it's overall, who do you like of the final four? Brazil, Spain, Japan, Italy, France, Argentina, Germany, Belgium.
I'm going to say Brazil definitely in their home turf is making the Final Four.
You got to think so.
And then I'm going to say Italy.
Okay.
And I'm going to say Spain and Argentina.
I think that's probably pretty safe. I can't leave out Germany though.
No, I know. I mean, maybe Germany makes it instead of Spain or Italy. So.
I'll go Brazil. I mean, you know, the safe pick is the safe picks are Brazil, Spain, Germany, and Argentina. But I think there's going to be at least one upset. So I'm going to say Brazil, Spain, Belgium, and Germany. I think Argentina loses, even though I like Argentina. So Brazil, Spain, Belgium, Germany. And I think if depending on how it shakes out group-wise, I think Germany and Brazil in the finals, with Spain shocked to go out in the semis, the defending champions. So I guess I'm going to take Brazil over Germany. Germany is like the Dallas Cowboys. They've been to it almost every time, but they've lost as many as they've won.
Not Dallas Cowboys recently, but
no. I mean historically, right?
Sure.
Like Brazil and Italy are like the Steelers and the 49ers. When they get there, they tend to win it.
Mm-hmm.
But Germany gets there and wins, gets there and loses, gets there and wins, gets there and loses, gets there and loses. You know, like the Cowboys have done historically. You know, over time, used to be Dallas was like the only team that had been the Super Bowl five times and only won two. So
it's true.
Yeah. So they're kind of like Germany that way. So. All right. So are you down with Brazil winning?
Absolutely.
You got the home advantage. So.
Let me ask you this. Out of the first round matchups, give me the one or two games you absolutely are going to make sure you're in front of the TV for. I know you're going to watch them all, but the one or two most looked forward to games for the lay person.
The first round, like game one, two, or three, anything in the first round when it's like the round robin? Anything in the round robin?
Yeah.
Netherlands Spain will be a rematch of the World Championship of the World Cup Championship last time. That'll be a great game, unless Netherlands doesn't show up, which is possible. Italy England, that'll be a tasty matchup, as they say. The United States against any one of our three, really.
Sure. I mean, I'm going to watch those anyway, but.
But yeah, I mean, the thing with the groups is it really is kind of, you know, you got like the one big team, and then some of the groups don't even have the one big team. So, I mean, I'm going to say, I guess Brazil-Mexico. See, I would say Brazil-Mexico normally, but Mexico's kind of been down the last
year. Yeah, but it'll still be a big game. That'll be fun to watch.
That'll be a fun game, yeah. Oh, the fans will be fun just to see on both sides of that, even if it's not a great game. So, but yeah, Netherlands, Spain for sure. And then I think there's a couple I'm curious about. Like, I mean, obviously Group C is wide open if Colombia's not that great. You got Greece, Ivory Coast, and Japan. I mean, this is like, you know, this is like if you did the SEC this way, this is like a group that had Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Ole Miss and Mississippi State. It's like, it's not the greatest matchups, but anybody could win it. You know, any one of them could come out of that group. So that'd be kind of fun. So yeah, there you go. And in the second round, there's going to obviously be some really powerhouse matchups when you start getting that A1 versus B2 and the C1 versus D2 and that kind of thing. So you could get, Germany versus Russia. That'll be fun. And, you could get like Argentina, France. So good stuff.
So it's not, just to be clear, it's not random when they come out of the groups.
Right.
It's seeded. There's two teams from each group and they're seeded and they play a specific other group team.
Yeah. The number one team from A plays the number two from B. The number two from A plays the number one from B. And then same with C and D, E and F and G and H.
Okay.
And then you just work it down. The only question is, where does it go after that? And for that, you kind of need the little bracket, because I can't ever remember how they do. Do they go to A versus H, or do they go, you know, but yeah, for the last eight teams, you need a bracket. But other than that, it's pretty obvious who plays who. That's why I was saying that you could very obviously get Russia versus Germany, which just for historical reasons alone would be fun.
Sure.
And let me see, if Iran somehow gets through their group, no, they don't get us. They would get they would get France or Switzerland probably. That's no fun.
Boo.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I wouldn't bother being any.
If we end up second in our group, we would probably play Belgium in the second round. Oh, Lord, that won't be any fun. So, because they're good. All right, so there's your World Cup feature for this week, and I guess that's the last. We'll talk about it until the tournament actually starts, then maybe I'll do like a 2-minute update, you know, at the end of the show during the summer or something.
Van's World Cup Minutes.
Talking to you live from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, to all the ships at sea.
Well, looks like we made it to that point again.
Yeah, I think we're done. So, all right. Well, don't forget to send in your questions and comments for our next show. It'll be a couple of weeks down the road now. I guess our next one will be coming up at the very end of May or just beginning in June.
Yep.
Don't forget to check out the sister show, the White Rocket Podcast, where I and a guest, sometimes John, sometimes somebody else, sometimes just me, talk about the best of popular culture, movies and TVs and books and stuff. And don't forget our books, Season of Our Dreams, the 2010 Auburn Tigers, and Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era. And again, don't forget, if you're in the Alabama area, to come check out the Alabama Phoenix Festival. I will be there all weekend doing various panels and events that they will have me doing. I have no idea yet what they'll have me doing, but I'm sure it'll be fun stuff, and I'll have my books and that sort of thing with me. So, all right, John, our time is up, and as always, we thank you for yours. All I guess there's left to say is War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.